a martini, shaken, not stirred.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
Houston, we have a problem.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
I'm your number one fan.
And here we go.
Happy Thursday, moviegoers. Welcome to another episode of the Cinnamon Movie Podcast as we talk A24 series. Today is Uncut Gems. I'm your host, Juan, joined by the guys. Ed?
Hey, what's up, folks?
Zach?
What's up, guys?
And Zach, you're making your little
intro to my first A24 film.
Your debut on this fantastic Thursday episode of the Cinnamon Movie Podcast. I think we're just going to dub it series. We can call anything we want, and you know, 1 week, 1 month, we could, after A24, it's just the endless possibilities. It could be Saw, it could be Friday the 13th, it could be Lord of the Rings, it could be
don't get them that excited.
Oh yeah, it could be Harry Potter.
Oh.
Or it could be Fast in the franchise.
So we're going to start with Fast 9 and work our way down.
There we go. But no, I think it's going to be a fun day today. A24, thank you everybody for who's been joining us on these episodes. Last week, me and Ed talked mid-90s. A lot of fun emails for mid-90s. If you guys haven't, go back and listen to our last episode, all about Star Wars Episode 1. Some of us bitched, some of us moaned, some of us complained, but some of us enjoyed Episode 1. So go back and listen to that episode. And you can find us wherever you stream your podcast from, whether it be iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, anywhere else. But guys, let's get ready to talk some Uncut Gems today. It has a 7.4 on IMDb, 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 91% Metascore. Also, 81% of Google users enjoyed the movie. With a budget of only $19 million, this movie grossed a little over $50 million at the box office, and it has a December 25th, 2019 release. Zach, I think me and you went and saw this in the theater.
Yes.
I
saw it Christmas Day, actually.
Did we go Christmas Day? Didn't I go with you?
No.
I went by myself.
You went by yourself. I think you saw it
a few days later.
Yeah, I saw it Christmas Day.
Ed, and today was your first time watch for this, correct?
Correct.
Like it has been with... I'm going to ask you too, Zach, but what do you, these A24 films, are they starting to get to you?
Get me? What do you mean by that?
Like, how are you,
do I like them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like them. I mean, honestly, most of them, yeah. I've really, really liked a lot of them just because of, some of the originality of the story for that matter.
Go.
As well as just like... And some of them rawness, and some of them, you know, the artistic side, and some of them just dialogue driven and story for that matter. So I mean, it just every one of them kind of has their own uniqueness for that matter.
Speaking of uniqueness, this one opens up with the, I guess Adam Sandler calls them Black Jews, as they're looking for the
Nopal.
The Nopal.
Yeah.
The
Wailo mine in Ethiopia, Africa.
And the movie tells you that, like, you know, it takes place in New York City, 2012.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, when I first saw this movie, first off, my hard-on meter was at the very top. Yeah. A24, Adam Sandler, I was ready to go.
Safdie Brothers.
It was a...
Well, let's do our just initial thoughts on the movie before we get into it. You know, you had really... played up the whole idea of, oh, Sandler's going to get nominated. I was like, shut up. It's like, it's not going to happen.
Nobody thought this movie was going to be good at all.
No. The trailer for this movie is incredible. It really hypes it up. It really makes it look like a neo, like, thriller type thing.
I thought it was going to be a one of those movies that were based off of real events.
Yeah.
Especially when it opens up and it says, you know, New York City 2012.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, I see the film and I thought, man, my first watch of this, I thought it was amazing. I thought, like, wow, Sandler, dude, he could go for gold, man. I thought his performance was very powerful in this.
So, Ed, what about you in the first few statements of your first watch? What do you think?
Be honest.
I've kind of got to say overhyped.
That's probably personally.
Yeah.
By me.
Well, not even really just that, but I mean a little overhyped just due to the trailer as well. And I mean on top of that, maybe it's just like how I like Adam Sandler, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's just that. I mean, I'll probably watch it another time or two soon just to get a bit more acquainted with the movie, I guess, and see maybe if the second or third time kind of warms me up more to it. I don't hate it. Like, I definitely don't dislike it. But
is it?
Yeah.
It's fine. Is it Zach? Copyrighted. It's fine.
It's not that it's fine. It's all right. It's all right, you know. Yeah. So, how about yours?
Did you see this twice in the theater?
I saw it twice in the theater, and then I bought it, went straight home and watched it, and then I haven't touched it since. So today was almost kind of a fresh viewing for me.
Mm-hmm.
A virgin watch.
I enjoyed the hell out of it in the movie theater. I probably had maybe 25, 30 people around me in the theater. So when there were scenes where, and we'll jump right into it, the scene where he's getting a
colonoscopy.
Yeah. My theater popped. They laughed their ass off on that. When the camera widened out, they thought that was fucking funny as shit.
Yeah.
So,
that's kind of literally like after it stopped with all the colors and stuff like that. Once I seen that, I was just like, this is probably up his ass. I was like, great.
It's like, yeah, it transfers from like colorized crystals to beautiful images to like what looks probably
flesh tone,
flesh and shit, and like it pans out and it's like, oh, that's so Adam Sandler's getting a colonoscopy.
So I wonder why that was put in there.
I wonder.
I saw this with my mom and the whole visual like crystal, colorful 2001. Thing that she didn't like that at all.
Really?
Like she thought that could have been cut.
Well, so when I first watched it again today, I was like, why does the movie start out like that?
Well, I mean, later on in the movie, of course, he takes a call while him and Lakeith are having it out, and he takes a call about, I guess, part of it being that since I guess Jewish people have colon cancer a lot. I don't know if that's a real or just a bullshit thing he put on the movie.
But he had I think they was just trying to say that he had a family history of it.
You know, well, no, he said specifically that, yes, and, you know, I thought we were the chosen people.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
He didn't say my family. He just said, I thought we, as in Jewish people, were the chosen people. So it was just like, is this real or is this just a bunch of bullshit, or, you know, is this just kind of a funny thing he put in there for an ass joke?
So, you know, with his debts mounting and angry collectors closing in, a fast-talking New York City jeweler risked everything in hopes of staying afloat and alive. Uncut Gems is now available on Netflix or wherever you rent digital movies, and I just saw it at Best Buy today for $7. Starring Adam Sandler, Julia Fox, India Menzel, and Lakeith Stanfield, and directed by the Safdie brothers.
Don't forget Kevin Garnett.
Kevin Garnett, who I want to talk about that for a little bit, because Kevin Garnett, to me, when I saw him in the trailer, I was like, here we go. It's going to be somebody who shouldn't be in a movie, can't act, just, you know, stupid.
Yeah.
Took me by surprise. The very first time I watched it all the way to now, he's like one of the most enjoyable characters in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to pull out partially a little bit, he does play himself with lines added to himself. So, I mean, he knows how to halfway play the part at least. But then again, I do have to give it to you as well. I did enjoy his character quite a bit. You know,
I want to point out that NBA, that leather NBA jacket he had on
slick.
In the very, very beginning.
It kind of had the old school feel. As well as, like, it actually was quality. Like, it wasn't just a cheap thing that was going to flake in 2 years.
This reminded me, with how fast the music is, this movie, the very 15 minutes gave me like really high anxiety
right.
because of how fast the music is and he's already in debt. What did you guys think about the beginning? Like, did you guys like how it automatically showed him in debt and he's already trying to keep up with the sharks?
Yeah, I think what this movie does really well, I think it just shows how far greed can take somebody and to the point where it's just, like you said, mounting and mounting and mounting. And then you think, a logical person would think, okay, I need to stop. And he goes and makes more bets on Garnett and his team.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, like Howard, let's just slow down a little bit. And I think his Adam Sandler's portrayal of this is just, I think, from what I understand, did you watch any of the special features?
Not yet.
The Safdie brothers said that this is kind of inspired by their dad's time in the Diamond District of New York. And so a lot of this is where it's just like, oh, I took money from him, I'm going to pay you off, but I'm also going to take money from you and put on a bet so I can clear all of it. That's a real thing. It's just like an endless, you know, you remember in school, like the food webs, where it's just like one species eats another and goes on down the road.
Yeah.
That's what basically it is. It's just a continuous
circle of life.
Basically.
So let's talk about how
it works.
I guess not popular this movie is as far as people viewers and awards go. It was nominated for 89 awards, 125, none of them being Oscars.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing I don't get. I mean, you know, I understand if you don't like this movie, but you got to give Sandler credit. I mean, he definitely deserved a nomination for this.
I will definitely say he was not the part I didn't like about this movie at all. He really wasn't that part, for that matter. I got to say, I kind of like two parts of it. Some of the storyline, and then Lakeith Stanfield kind of just, yeah. And then the whole fucking...
You didn't like Lakeith Stanfield?
Not, maybe, well, more his character than maybe him. How his character was written. So I guess a lot of it was just the writing of it, as well as, like, the fucking weekend thing. Like,
what do you mean?
Because we'll
get ready to get in and talk about, because this movie's 2:15.
Yeah.
But to me, it went by like an hour and a half. I don't know about you guys, if it dragged a little bit.
It dragged a little bit.
Did you guys check it out on the Voodoo or Netflix?
Netflix.
Blu-ray? Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about, Zach.
Well, the thing is, for me, the first time watch, I think you get so invested. And, I mean, Ed, I know you...
No, go
but
ahead.
For me, it was like, I got so invested in Howard's story and just if he's going to get out of this, all this.
Yeah.
That it flew by.
That's true.
The second time, I can see why people have problems with this movie. I can understand. Because for me, I watched like an hour and 20 minutes and I turned it off.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Because a movie like this in a theater with the sound, the story, nothing to concentrate because you're in a theater.
Yeah.
You get drawn into Adam Sandler's performance.
Yes.
You're like, Jesus Christ, this guy is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then, spoiler alert, go back and see the movie if you haven't. But when he gets shot at the end.
Dude, like.
I had a hard time swallowing.
I was in a packed theater, and you could literally hear the gasp when that happened.
Now, when you watch this at home, I feel like you have a little bit more to focus on other than his story.
Right.
Whether it be Lakeith Stanfield or the girlfriend or the mom or the bookies trying to get him, which is funny to me at the end of the day because it's his father-in-law that he owes all the money to.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, we'll get ready to get into that. So, like I said, I wanted to talk about this, but I was going to save it for Monday's episode, but it's just so exciting, and I just wanted to hurry up and talk about it, and I didn't want a chance to forget about it. So, we're going to talk about it here on this Uncut Gems episode.
Okay.
Last Sunday was Father's Day, and it was a 22,000 sellout at Madison Square Garden for the Foo Fighters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Are you guys excited? Are you guys finally glad that thing? I got goosebumps just now here, sitting here talking about it. Are you guys glad that things are now finally going this direction? 22,000 people sold out Madison Square Garden on top of each other for the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
And they opened up the concert with times like these. A 3-hour performance. hasn't been done in over 420 days.
Well, what they did, part of that, and I've seen this on the news just a few days ago for that matter, they gone ahead and had two different lines. One was a ticket line. The other was basically checking you for your card or your
They wanted whatever. To make sure you at least got the first vaccine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're doing precautions and all that stuff, don't get me wrong. But, yeah, I mean, hey.
But if upstate New York can sell out 22,000 people, it's just a matter of, I mean, it's done. It's over. I'm just glad that things are going back to normal.
Right.
How does that make you guys feel? Hearing that, like, I don't know if you keep up with any entertainment stuff like that, but hearing that today, how does that make you feel?
I mean, me personally, I just with my personal health problems, I mean, I don't know if I would go to a concert, but in terms of just regular healthy people, I mean, I'm ecstatic for it. The fact that, you know, we can actually sell out that many seats for a concert proves that, you know, we're finally getting back on the railroad tracks of normal.
I'm going to go to Ed to see what his opinion is on this, but before we get done with you, Zach, you know, we're just a few hours. You know, tonight we are going to probably a sold-out theater to see Fast 9.
Yep.
How do you feel about that, being surrounded by that many people?
I got his tickets where we're maybe not that close to people, but, I mean, at the end of the day, the fact that, you know, the theater, they're not doing social distance anymore. So, I mean, the fact that, you know, these businesses real hot truly have confidence in that people are being safe, they're trying to take care of themselves, we're adults, we can do this, proves that, you know, maybe this is behind us.
Ed, what about you? How do you feel that, you know, a concert of that mass just happened and we're just a few hours away from going to a sold out theater?
I mean, I'm not going to say who's concert I'm going to, but I've got tickets for a concert in January.
Right, right. But as far as today goes, now.
No, that's what I'm saying. You know, even having the possibility of that is a nice thing and all that. So, I mean, I'm grateful for it, at least for that matter. Definitely. So
nice. I want to talk about the score, because not only do you have the score from the weekend, you also have just the original score for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a tremendous score.
Did anyone get like an 80s Stranger Things vibe from it? Like the xylophone and everything?
You guys might hate me, but I've never seen a full episode of Stranger Things.
Either way.
What about you, Ed?
It just depends on kind of the music of the weekend, for that matter, because he's kind of like that, as well as, I mean, like Bruno Mars is definitely like a 70s, 80s kind of disco, like pop, hip hop kind of feel. But I mean, as far as that, yeah.
I think the score, not so much The Weeknd or whatever, but the score by Daniel Lopatin, I think it really added to the stress of the movie.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you know, it just kept building and building and building until finally you have like a climactic scene of whether it be the end or Howard getting punched or even him or the auction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The auction was insane. Everything about just the way he was condoning business at one point when he, I thought all his troubles probably could have been just thrown away whenever he could, at the very beginning, he should have just sold KG the opal.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, honestly, after he had that first really good game with it, he probably could have got $100 million from it.
Yeah, but I mean, don't get me wrong, it kind of goes right there. A, like you were saying earlier, you know, greed, and then B, hindsight's a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, because it's like you could do something right now to end all of your troubles, but no, you've got to go for more, got to go for more, got to go for more, because he swore up and down, this thing is worth, you know, $1 million, and all that and all this, but at the end of the day, basically, like, maybe you did or maybe you didn't get fucked, but hey.
Well, and I think, I think a character like Howard, you know, it's never going to be enough. You know, whether he had paid off all his loans to his father-in-law and whoever else, gambling is, you know, is addiction. Whether, you know, depending on who you, what side you take, he was going to put another bet on the line.
We all have an addiction.
Yeah. Well, some obviously more than others. But I mean, like, but the whole thing of like, you know, even when he's talking to Idina Menzel, his wife, where he's just like, it means nothing. Nothing. And he's talking to about Julia Fox.
I'm getting her confused with the voice actress of
Elsa,
right? Or is that her?
Well, she does the singing voice, and Kristen Bell's like the character voice.
Okay. But she is the singing voice.
Yeah,
okay.
Let It Go, yeah. I was expecting any moment for that song to come up.
No shit. Yep. Okay.
little bonus, something you didn't know.
Yeah, there you go.
Double duty.
What do you guys think about Julia Fox, who plays Julia in this? I mean, for the fact that this is her first movie, and I think she really holds her own, I think she does a very good job.
Yeah, this was one of her first mainstream movies, and I think she is breathtaking. She not only
beautiful woman.
Not only, but I think she nailed it as far as like acting goes.
Yeah.
The scene where Adam Sandler's trying to get her out of the building.
Yeah.
That phenomenal. Was, yeah, that was very well done.
She held, and I don't know. People are probably gonna go out here and hear this and say, it's Adam Sandler, still your role. But I'm trying to say that I feel like she stepped up her game performing with somebody like Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, okay, so, yeah, he's the funny...
I don't know why he gets a bad rap.
Well, it's because he's the funny guy, and he does a lot of dumb shit on movies. And, yeah, of course. But, I mean, don't get me wrong, at the same point, you know, it's kind of like a person who sings fucking horribly. Like, I mean, just fucking horribly. It's like, okay, they've got to be a good singer, because if they can dumb themselves down that damn bad, there's got to be a big-ass upside on this. You know, and same thing with him.
Well, let me ask you guys this, because, you know, I've heard a lot of complaints about the movie, especially with Sandler. Well, I think all of us can, I think the mass majority of people who've seen this movie agree that Sandler is definitely the best part of it. But there are some people that say, oh, he's just playing a different version of one of his other characters.
Yeah.
You guys think that?
I've heard some reviews even say that he's just a loudmouth version of himself in real life.
Mm-hmm.
To those, I say, I don't think you know what maybe acting is.
Yeah.
Because he is definitely, at least from what I've seen and portrayed, name a character in another movie where he's like this, where he's ruthless, where he doesn't give a fuck, where he's always willing to get in fights. The first movie that popped up was Happy Gilmore. I even have it in my notes. Adam Sandler versus The Weeknd, or Adam Sandler versus Bob Barker, who did it better?
Bob Barker.
I was hoping that he would throw hands in this movie. But the one thing I didn't like about the Safdie brothers writing in this, and Good Time, to me, one of the best movies of that year. I love Good Time. I'll watch it again.
So that's why it was specifically mentioned.
What?
Good Time.
The movie was mentioned?
Yeah. Yeah, because before he takes his kid up to the apartment to use the bathroom, he specifically says, oh, yeah, have you seen a movie called Good Time? Yeah, it's a really good movie. This guy is the father. He was in it. He's actually the father in Coming to America. He's like, oh, okay. Or he actually played in Coming to America. Hmm. He's like, oh, that's cool. When he knocks on 33F.
Yeah. Went over my head. But I didn't get that reference.
But
I completely forgot what I was going to. What was I talking
good
about?
Good Time.
Oh, the screenplay from the Safdie Brothers.
Oh. I feel like the Safdie brothers wrote Adam Sandler to not only like be greedy and act like a badass, but I feel like they made him look like too much of a bitch.
I mean, honestly, to be that kind of like in your face at one point and then just back off all the way entirely, like in the club,
I mean,
with Lakeith Stanfield when he's wearing the orange jacket.
But it went back and forth. Like he bullied up and bucked up to like The Weeknd and to Lakeith Stanfield's character.
And even Kevin Garnett.
Yeah, everybody else, they kind of, you know, I don't know. I was hoping for a little bit more of some more oomph in his action.
I think one of the things that really stood out to me in this watch was, and you guys can agree or disagree, was just, and I don't have a problem with this, but just like the over-reliance of cussing and just the argument sequences, the scenes. It's just, I felt like there came a point in the movie on this watch was just like, okay, I don't understand what people are talking about, and I need everyone to slow down and start using sentences. Because everyone's just talking over each other.
You got to look at the dialogue of them all being New Yorkers.
Right. That's true.
I mean, I didn't mind the language. The language was whatever. But
of course not. Ed loves that language.
Okay, look, motherfucker. You can go fuck No, I'm just kidding.
But I agree with Ed. I think that just because of them being New York and them always talking on top of each other. Do you think the poster gave away too much? Do you like the poster?
I like the poster in that it really doesn't show, other than Adam Sandler's bloody nose, it doesn't really show much. I think it represents his whole character in that he's always running, he's always trying to be 10 steps ahead of the game, even though he's not.
It's interesting. But we're halfway through this conversation, which means we got some A24 vibes to get off our chest. So we are talking this segment that just debuted last week. If you guys follow a lot of A24 conversation social media groups or any social media groups that has A24 listings, one of the things we talk about in those groups is vibes. Like, I love this movie. It has A24 vibes. It's almost like a catchphrase. Like, if you see something weird as shit, you're like, it's got A24 vibes. So this segment, we're going to all talk about one movie, and we're going to bring it up and just kind of see if anybody agrees or disagrees. Ed, do you want to go first?
Yeah.
We'll kind of give Zach a little rundown of how we feel.
Kind of a little hard one to do is this segment, for that matter.
I like it hard, though.
I would say The Platform. I don't remember. Netflix. I think it was you that introduced me to it.
I've never seen it. No.
Or
you told us about that.
Yeah. The Platform on Netflix.
Probably was somebody else then. But someone had told me about it, thought that I would like it, thought it, you know, kind of be a cool little mind fuck of a film, and it was. I mean, honestly, it's a bit more gory, I guess, than most A24 films are.
Wait till we see The Green Room.
Well, you know, I'm just saying. But, I mean, like, yeah, I've got to say that. That one would go ahead and, like, come across as the field of an A24 vibe, if you would, for that matter. I really like that one, though. It's a very strange movie, but at the same time, it's very good on societal understanding. So I definitely, if you could actually go ahead and watch it, I would definitely say give it a try, 100%.
Check it out, guys. Go visit The Platform on Netflix and email the show and let us know. We'll read emails every Monday night, or Monday. My A24 Vibes movie is going to be something that I think we're going to talk about, I think, in September or August, one of those two. But it's Promising Young Woman. It was a movie this year nominated for Best Picture. It really, to me, has A24 vibes, not only from just the start all the way even through the ending. Zach, you've seen it. It's one of those movies that's just I don't want to give too much away. Because,
incredible movie.
Yeah, because we are going to be talking about it in a few episodes. So Promising Young Woman is just, man, how can you really mention it without a spoiler? It's just, Carey Mulligan is just crazy.
It's a Hitchcock thriller.
There you go.
It really is a Hitchcock thriller.
Yeah. What about you, Zach? What movie out there do you have that you have, or that you've seen that just, you know what? It feels like an A24 movie.
So probably one for me is, it does feel like a mainstream film. It is a mainstream film, but in certain ways it is very independent and it feels A24-ish, is Sicario.
Yeah.
And just kind of the way it's shot, the aesthetic, the performances are very grounded and
very, very graphic.
Yeah. And really it's not really there are certain sections where it's graphic, but overall I think the whole nature of the drug cartel and just I think the war on drugs is a graphic subject matter in that it's very grimy and gritty and you don't know what direction it's going to go.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty nice. But yeah, send us some movies that you guys feel have some A24 vibes at our email bag and we'll read it out every Monday at cinemen921@gmail.com. That's cinnamon921@gmail.com. What did you guys think of them driving to Philly to try to get the Opal back?
Oh, my God. I think at that point, I think at that point, Howard is just desperate.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of desperate, but at the same time, he's very annoyed and pissed off. Because, I mean, honestly, you'd figure, and I'm not saying this about the actual man, Kevin Garnett himself, like right now, I never heard anything bad about the guy. However, you'd figure a guy of his profile would be a lot better in a business standpoint, which is what this is, because he's like, let me hold it for the night, and then, you know, I'll give it to his ass in the morning and go from there.
But how honestly, I know everybody said he was good for it, and I know you're saying, you know, it's business that he said he was going to bring it right back, but how stupid is Howie's just the way he thinks, because he's an NBA star. He's not. It's not like, you know, he's just going to turn around and not have things not to do. Plus, it's the playoffs.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So, like, if you give somebody something like that, of that statue, you think that he's not going to be able to just turn right back around and give it to you the next day.
But then again, a man of his word. I mean, you know what I mean? Because, I mean, honestly, like, I get that. But he was going to send old, you know, lackey, Lakeith Stanfield's character, to bring it right back, you know? So, I mean, you know, he's already like, well, I'll send it with him. So I'm like, okay, you know, if I'm Howie, I'm like, okay, then this is on your ass if it's not in my hands tomorrow by blink time. You know, and I mean, obviously the dude's got enough room or enough at least pool to be right in there in whatever the fuck he wants for the practice. So I'm just like, that's his fault, not Kevin Garnett's. That's Lakeith Stanford's fault, his character's fault for that matter, you know.
I want to mention, because I think it was just smart writing, and I don't know if it was, I would really like to know this, but I don't know if it's out there. I don't know if it's the Safdie brothers who wrote this in, or if Adam Sandler just knew this off the top of his head, but the first player to have points in the NBA being a Jewish person, I thought that was just fantastic as far as like the depth of how knowledgeable either Adam Sandler or the Safdie brothers were to go get that stat and bring it into the film.
Yeah.
What did you guys think where the bookies got him at his daughter's play and ripped all of his clothes off and threw him in the trunk?
That was pretty shitty right there. I mean, don't get me wrong, you're a low-ass person for some shit like that. But I guess him going ahead and actually taking it like that and then going ahead and actually taking it on the chin by himself instead of in front of his whole, like, all of his kids and shit like that, I guess that speaks a lot of the character of Howie, for that matter. So
yeah, and it didn't. I still want to know, does it ever really say how much he really does owe his father-in-law and what the money was used for, do you know?
It doesn't say a specific number, no.
No. Did you guys enjoy the weekend at all in the movie? Yeah?
So I just looked up that, and I just looked up whether the first person to make points in a basketball game was Jewish or not. Apparently, it's Oscar Benjamin Schechtman.
Yeah, he says the name in the movie.
And his parents were Jewish immigrants from Russia, is what it says.
I know they wouldn't throw a non-fact into the movie like that. But I just want to know if it was the Safdie brothers who wrote that in there, or if it was like Adam Sandler, like, hey, I know this, I'm going to say this.
I think it was a Safdie thing.
Play it, because Adam Sandler is a huge Knicks fan.
I was about to say, he's a big basketball guy, yeah. So that might have been him.
He's a huge, huge Knicks fan.
Hell, that could have been ad-lib. You never know.
The weekend in the movie, I know he's only in it for just a cup of coffee. What'd you guys think? Did you enjoy them putting the weekend in there? Because it's 2012, so he was a local underground artist at the time.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool, but at the same time, like, I don't know, like, okay, same thing with Kevin Garnett, though. I don't know who the fuck, you know, The Weeknd is in real life. I don't know him. I like his music, but I don't know who he is in real life. But they kind of made him, in my eyes, look kind of douchebag-wise.
Yeah. True.
I mean, in that, because, like, oh, I'm not performing. Like, you're kind of, like, at that time, you're kind of a fucking half-wit nobody that's just an underground fucker, and I ain't playing without no blacklight. Like, okay, you're making demands that maybe is above your pay grade at that time. Like, now, yeah, everybody would be like, dude, get this fucking blacklight right now, bitch. Like, the fuck are you doing? This is The Weeknd. You know.
I thought you know, it is a cliche in mine, but I thought he was fine. It's always weird when they take musicians and put them in like film roles.
Yeah, because
or anybody that plays themselves.
Yeah,
it's either like, oh, this is the deep like intrusional type of their character, or, well, they're just the biggest douchebag or whatever kind of thing. And yeah, he got the douchebag role, unfortunately.
I mean, me personally, I think you could just you could have had that same scenario, but just create just a fictional singer.
Yeah,
and it didn't have to be like The Weeknd or
right. Because I mean, now you're putting a high profile person in kind of a half-assed role.
Yeah,
it's like, okay.
I mean, you know, he was only on set for like a day to film that entire scene.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's basically what you get paid to do.
Yeah.
And you just got paid to do it being paid to do it.
Yeah.
Like, the fuck?
You're doing your job, but you're getting paid.
Right. Yeah. Still. But, I mean, you know, okay, so we've got the kids, we've got the play, we've got The Weeknd, we've been introduced to Kevin Garnett. What'd y'all think of Lakeith Stanfield's character? What'd y'all think of him? I mean,
I enjoyed him. I enjoy almost everything he's really been in as of late. I think he plays that character perfect, being kind of Sandler's right hand lackey, if you will.
He's playing both sides.
He's true, but he's looking out for himself, I think, a little bit more. Which, yeah. I think if Adam Sandler's character was a real person, I think you'd have to.
Yeah. Because there are multiple times in the movie where he said, "Hey, bro, I'm going to take my business elsewhere. I could have got more money for that," or whatever. You know, it's just a continuous. He's almost just like the bookies. He's just a constant threat of just taking business from Howard.
Yeah. But, I mean, at the same time, you know, Howard does the exact same thing when the appraisal comes through. And he's like, "What the fuck is this?" You know, and he's like, "I could have gone to 6 other appraisers and 5 would have told me, you know, this, at minimum $3,000 a carat for this."
Do you think a movie like this works? I mean, yeah, it's directed by the Safdies, Sandler's in it, A24, but this is still one of those movies that wasn't seen by a lot of people. Do you think a movie like this works if it was done by, let's say, Brad Pitt, directed by Quentin Tarantino?
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is that I caught it on the first watch, but Scorsese is a producer on this, executive producer, and I think if you had gotten him and Leo, I think maybe a lot more people would have came out and saw it.
So I'm going to go ahead and follow that comment with something I've been thinking about for a couple minutes, and that I thought about through my watch of this. Blood Diamond is what this kind of like reminds me of a little bit, just because it has something to do with, you know, diamonds overseas and all that, mm-hmm. you know, coming in. And, you know, Damon Hansu, that was the first movie I seen him in, and it had Leo in it for that matter. And, you know, they kind of did the same thing in this, but it wasn't a live animal instead of a dead animal. They snuck it over into like a goat or a sheep, and this was in a fish. But yeah,
well, and something similar to this is when we were talking about A24 vibes, I should have brought up was The Gambler with the Mark Wahlberg.
Yep.
Very, very similar concept of a man trying to outrun the money he's borrowed. And you have John Goodman who says, you know, "Look, I'll kill your entire family. I'll kill your entire family tree if you, you know, you don't give me my money." And, you know, it's the same thing of Mark Wahlberg just putting bet after bet after bet in order to get even.
Would you say, in your mind, Zach, that year, would you call this a top 5 performance of that year?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Because I think that was the same year as Joker, Joaquin Phoenix's Joker.
Joaquin Phoenix, Leo, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah. Tom Hanks and Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Yeah. But it's just one of those things. I'm kind of salty sometimes when I watch this because I feel like he and this movie should have got a little bit more recognition.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think if anything, you know, you didn't even have to nominate the movie for Best Picture, but, I mean, the primarily everything that this film got nominated for was for his performance.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, he also did this with, like, a mouthpiece in, right?
Yeah.
Like,
false teeth.
So.
And what's interesting is that he initially didn't want to do the project. Like, the Safdies came to him back in 2009 or whatever.
Probably right after he did
he saw Good Time. He said, "Oh wow, I got to work with those guys." Yeah. And he read the script and he said, "All right, I'm in."
Nice.
So,
did you guys like the ending? How it just, you know, it looked like all his baskets were going to come into fruition, and he just kind of, you know, he let him out to in good standing and popped him right in the head.
I think it's a deserved ending, because I think I don't think
what Tarantino ending is what it is.
It is
definitely shock value, 100% shock value for that matter. You can even see the extreme regret on Arnie's face, or Arno's face for that matter, throughout most of the dealings with Howie. You could always see Arno kind of looking at him like,
because the father-in-law even got killed at the end too.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean,
the father-in-law did not want him to die. You can tell that.
I just think that if he hadn't died in this scenario, I think his past was going to come back. His sin was eventually going to catch up with him.
He even had guys that, you know, the place where the auction takes place, he comes out earlier in the film, and those two guys were after him, say, "Hey, you owe me money.
Mm-hmm.
Where's my money?" He gives him the watch.
Yeah,
the Rolex. Or the guy who he's got the blinged out Michael Jackson necklace.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody's after him. You know, you find, almost in every other scene, you find somebody new coming after him.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. It's one of those movies, guys, that you can find, like I said, on Netflix. Or if you're into physical media, you can find the hard copy at Best Buy, $7.
Yeah. I mean, this movie's, I've noticed, it's always on sale, whether it be $6 or $7.
I think I got it brand new for $17.99.
Yeah.
So
I bought it for my birthday for $7.99.
Nice. Ed, what if you had any favorite scenes in this movie, what would you pick? You have any favorite scenes you want to get off your chest?
Definitely the scene where he tells her, after he gets his ass kicked, and then he goes up and he finally strikes the deal with Kevin Garnett. Kevin Garnett goes, so Arno and the other two are in there. After that happens, throughout the entire little gambling scene and all that with her going and getting the money and all that shit, that whole scene right there up until his death was like just fast-paced, nice, real nice choreography, action, as well as just like decent dialogue, because it was kind of funny, you know, keeping them in there and sweating the shit out of them for an entire basketball game, literally, and all that shit. And I mean, honestly,
did you think he was gonna die?
Not really, because part of me was thinking, you know, okay, Arno's calling more shots than, you know, he maybe is enforcing, but at the same time, it was kind of just like the one dude's just off the fucking hinges. So it's kind of like, okay, like I didn't really know that was going to happen, or I didn't think it was, but it definitely was shock value. I literally just was like, hold up, and you know, I backed up a minute, and then I was like, oh shit, okay. So yeah,
I think the guy who eventually killed Sandler, I think he had been insulted enough by him. He was like, all right, I'm done with you.
Yeah, I mean,
sitting in that sweat box probably was the last straw.
But then again, like, you got to kind of figure it like this. And I mean, I guess to a point. So, okay, my mind goes to this. Okay, you're Arno's lackey and all that shit. You're his muscle, whatever. Cool. Basically, now you're not going to get fucking paid. Your boss is that you killed your fucking boss. So,
yeah, I didn't get that one either.
And so your only option is what? To go after this girl, which you don't know where the fuck she's going. You don't know if she's coming back here. You don't know, you know, so it's just like, okay, just start robbing the fucking place. I mean, I guess you've done two murders, so fuck it. Why not? You know, even more. So, I don't know. That kind of just seemed like a fuck it, do what you want, do what you feel kind of thing. Shoot him, and then after that, just fucking go nuts kind of thing. It was just like, okay. Yeah.
I think kind of what Zach says, you know, probably does aim it up pretty good, that he had just finally had his last straw with the way Sandler made him look and feel. What about you, Zach? What were some of your favorite scenes throughout the movie?
The auction scene where they're for the opal that kept Garnett's trying to buy, and it's just a bidding war between the two characters was really good. The whole, you know, really the introduction of the opal and in the Ethiopian diamond mines, I guess they were, was really compelling. And the whole, it is kind of played for laughs, but the whole ambush at the school at his daughter's play And then he gets, like...
It is a fun scene.
Yeah.
He gets kidnapped, and then they drive him around, take him back to his car. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the whole... One thing I thought was really written, I think, was really well, was, you know, when Sandler's talking about the Opal, they're called Universe Gems.
Yeah.
And that's what this whole thing is to him. I mean, this rock basically becomes his entire universe. And it's almost kind of like the... red herring of the movie. Hitchcock saying. The diamond of the movie is basically the MacGuffin. You know, it really has a lot to do with the movie, but not really.
It's got everybody's attention.
It has everyone's attentions, but we're so focused on Howard's debt that that's what we go to.
Side mission in a way.
How much did it end up going for in the movie? Wasn't it like in the auction?
Like $190 in the auction, and he paid him technically with the cut that Dimonoi gets, like $165 or $155 or something like that.
$165 million.
No, it's thousands.
Oh, so it's not even as worth as much as he thought it would be.
Well, he's thinking three to five thousand per carat, and he's like, that's like a 6,000 or 600 carats or something like that. So they're even, when the family gets together, they're even doing the math at like $1.1 or $1.2 million.
Yeah, so
but at the same time...
Come to find out, he probably just bought a fucking rock.
Well, at the same time, it's just kind of like...
Did anyone have the idea... every time I watch this, and granted, this is really only my second watch, that there came a point in the movie, and I don't remember where, but like, is this a fake rock? Did Sandler like buy this on like... eBay or something, and it's not really like a gem from Ethiopia or anything.
He's trying to probably just fool over somebody.
Well, I mean, you even hear at the end of the movie, or within the last 20 minutes, Kevin Garnett goes like, how much did you fucking pay for this? You say, all these Ethiopian dudes, the Jewish people over there, like, you know, what they fucking make? Did you pay $1 million? He's like, no. He's like, well, that's not, you know, needed to know. That's a need-to-know basis. And he's like, you don't need to know that. He's like, nah, how much, man to man, how much you fucking pay? He was like, about $100,000. He's like, oh, so you double, like.
I still even think that's a fake estimate.
And he's like, oh, so you doubled your money. And then he goes, well, you know, yeah, trying to make a profit here. He's like, don't get me wrong. He's like, that's the same thing with you. He's.
What if he, yeah. I think this is probably digging way too deep. And I know the last, three A24 movies now we've done this booking scene. Where we kind of like dig deep into the movie.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here, my digging deep was what if he was one of those people who were so in debt that he knew Kevin Garnett was into coming to New York City for jewelry, and he was like, you know what? What if I spent this $300 mm-hmm. on this rock, and I get Kevin Garnett to believe that it's got some magical stuff. You know, some magical powers to it.
So,
to where he like reads into it. He's like, Kevin Garnett is big on, you know,
mythic,
not mythic, like sports.
Memorabilia.
Like I don't wash my socks if I win this game. So what is that called?
If he's superstitious.
What if he's like superstitious? So he's like, I'm gonna get this rock and pay like nothing for it and see if I can't sell it to Kevin Garnett. Because he thinks it's a good luck charm. Because
there is a scene where he's in the
rubbing it.
He's like rubbing it in the
locker room.
Locker room. Thank you.
No, so I mean, what that kind of reminds me of a little bit is Space Jam with the water.
For real.
Because the whole team's gotten their ass kicked, and then they go to the locker rooms.
Right, I understand that, but my bringing that up is like what I'm digging into this way too deep. By the way. But that's just like, what if Sandler's character thinks that he's superstitious and he's going to get Kevin Garnett to pay millions of dollars for this $200 rock?
Which, I mean, has a floor to it to a small point, but yeah.
I seriously don't remember. I'm sure they did. I just don't remember. How did Howard find out about the rock?
He said he did a lot of
YouTube videos.
YouTube as well as, I think he said Nat Geo or something like that.
Yeah, like a National Geographic. Documentary.
And did a lot of research for like 15 months or something like that.
It took him 17 months to get it shipped to him.
Right.
But
Look, you know, for me, I think this film, it feels very Scorsesean in different ways. And, you know, I understand this movie's not going to be for everyone. You know, on this rewatch, I mean, I definitely see flaws in the movie. But I think if you are a Sandler fan and you want to know what he's capable of, I would definitely check it out.
You're not really that much of a Sandler fan. And we're getting ready to give our star rating, but do you enjoy this movie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, you know, you put the nail right on the coffin. I'm not a Sandler fan. I think he's, you know, I think he's kind of burnt out. And the fact that he can still do something like this proves that, dude, if you get tired of this Netflix deal or whatever, I mean, you can do serious work. I just don't know why you choose to do this. You're Hubie Halloween. Yeah. Apparently that was Hubie Halloween is his reaction to not getting nominated for an Oscar.
I don't know. Do you think he could put that out that fast?
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah. Like his business strategy is like insane.
You don't think maybe he was doing that working on that during or after Uncut Gems was even nominated?
It kind of makes me wonder because he still had the kind of gruffy look and the mustache.
Yeah.
So
because his next movie is Hotel Transylvania 4. So Christmas Mania or some shit like that. But guys, let's get ready to give a star rating. Zach, go ahead and take one off your chest. What would you give this movie?
Initially, I think I gave it a 9. I think it was. I don't think I had it in my top 10 of the year, but it was definitely in the conversation. On this rewatch, it was. I think the length of it and just certain character choices just kind of like, all right. I'll give it an 8. I still think it's probably one of Sandler's best performances he's done. So,
Ed, what about you? What would you give this movie?
Truthfulness, I'd probably give this 6. I don't really think it has a lot of watchability to it personally, as well as some of the writing is just a little too over the top in my honest opinion. So yeah, I'd give it a 6 just because I thought it was a great performance for Sandler. It was cool to see him in a more serious role. Taking it more serious and all that, had some shock value to it, had a lot of good dialogue, but at the same time, like how it was written, like what was written in it sometimes just
was over the top.
Too overboard, too, you know, like, I mean, okay, if it's somewhat like that, then cool, but I mean, if you're trying to, like, it's kind of like, you know, writing, okay, the kid writing that from the kid's point of view, some shit like that is way too heavy. Especially later on down the line, they're like, oh, fuck, man, he took a lot of shit, you know. I had to walk to school 17 miles uphill both ways, no shoes, in the snow, and shit like that kind of thing. Like, this is what that kind of feels to me.
The descriptive nature of it?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, kind of like, okay, you know, I get it, but at the same time, like, a little overboard in my personal opinion. That's all. But I, like I said, I did think it was a damn good performance by him. I like most of it.
I'm going to give it an 8. My original star rating was like a 9, I think. But the only thing that hurt me this time around was I feel, you know, it's kind of the same way. I love the performances. I love the whole vibe of the film. Sandler's amazing. I just feel like it maybe was a bit lengthy. And I found some scenes where I was looking at my phone. But I'm going to give it an 8. I enjoyed this this movie. So go check it out. Adam Sandler's the best. It's on Netflix. Like I said, you can find it if you want the hard copy. It's at Best Buy right now for $7, wherever you get your movies from. So,
or check out our friends at CDR. I'm sure they have a good price on it.
I'm sure CDR has it. Other than that, guys, we are getting ready to go see Fast 9. And that'll be the next time that you guys can hear these lovely voices. Monday, June 28th, as we talk Fast 9. So Monday, guys, join us for Fast 9. Next Thursday, though, on this A24 series, we continue with Spring Breakers, Thursday, July 1st. July the 8th, we're talking Moonlight. July the 15th is Killing of a Sacred Deer. July the 22nd is It Comes at Night, and then July 29th is Waves. So go check it out, A24, find them wherever you can. And Zach, are you ready for Fast 9?
You know, as I've rewatched a lot of the films, and I think this is going to be a fun experience. I'm just excited to sit by Ed for 2.5 hours just cussing up a storm.
Honestly, we'll talk about it Monday on recent watches as well, but I've been watching most of them as well, and I'm just excited to see the character development, and I want to see what happens with the crew.
Yeah.
I want to see where Vin Diesel goes. I want to see where Letty and Michelle Rodriguez go. I just want to see how it ends for these characters.
Yeah.
Throw all the outlandish stunts and fire scenes, explosions, races. Throw all that out the window. I want to see where this family goes.
Yeah.
These characters.
Probably a barbecue and some Corona.
Hopefully. I don't know. They might throw us some... You think anybody dies? You think some people get taken away from us?
Probably.
And then I was going to save it till Monday, but Fast 10 and 11 are technically one whole movie. It's just going to be part one and part two.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it on the episode.
Yeah. So join us Monday. Ed, do you have anything you want to do or talk about before we get out of here with Uncut Gems?
No, nothing I really want to add. Just, I guess let's go see this damn thing. So this is Ed saying I will see you on the silver screen.
And we forgot to mention, check out our new unboxing video. I'm doing a unboxing video of the 70th anniversary of Casablanca. Big box set.
It's girthy.
It's girthy. So go check it out on YouTube.
Check out the YouTube page. It is on and live right now. So check out Zach's unboxing, and we will talk to everybody on Monday, June 28th. As we talk all about Fast 9 right here on the Cinnamon Movie Podcast.
Oh, you just came home from doing a beat. Tell me what you gonna do. Act